Hi, this is Elaine Long. Today, Daniela Ferrenta and I will bring you a telephone interview with Violet Gonda in London, who's considered the most wanted journalist by the Zimbabwe government right now. In Zimbabwe, Violet worked for a TV company as a production assistant on documentaries, which were invariably banned. She came to Britain to study journalism at City University and worked for the BBC before joining Shortwave Radio Africa. Because the shortwave station has been critical of the Zimbabwe government, everyone who works there has been banned in Zimbabwe. Violet sent her passport back to Zimbabwe to be renewed. That was the last time she heard of it. She's now stateless and passportless, and her bank account has been closed too. Now Violet has her master's degree in London, but it's possible that she'll never be able to go back to Zimbabwe again. In addition, the shortwave radio has been jammed by the government. They're currently broadcasting using medium wave, which can be heard by the Zimbabwean exiles living in South Africa. Let's listen to Violet's story together and learn more about the current situation in Zimbabwe.
We were mainly talking about the situation in Zimbabwe and the plight of many Zimbabweans in the country. Now, personally, I have also been affected, greatly because of the work that I'm doing in Zimbabwe. All nine of us were banned together, with the British, members of the British government, including Tony Blair, were the only eight Zimbabweans on that list of banned people. All the rest were Tony Blair, the British Prime Minister, and his cabinet. What also happened was, unfortunately, the time that we were banned, I had sent my passport to Zimbabwe for renewal. And so ever since the ban, I've been trying to get my passport back, but the Zimbabwean government refuses to issue me with a passport. And and my other colleague, Tererai Karimakwenda, is also in that situation, has also got that problem where we don't have passports. The British government has managed to give us a temporary travel document, but only a few countries accept that travel document. So sometimes I get invited to go to conferences or training, to different countries. A lot of those countries, especially the European Union countries, they don't accept that document. So I feel like a prisoner. I can't go anywhere. I can't go to Zimbabwe, and I can't go outside the UK. And the only other places that I've managed to go to using the travel document that was given to me by the British Home Office is to America and South Africa, and that's all. And I find that really frustrating. It's just crazy, but I'm sure one day we shall overcome. And SWA Africa was formed in 2001, and we have been broadcasting every single day of the week since then. It's based in London because independent radio is barred in Zimbabwe, and because the government has no tolerance whatsoever for independent or alternative voices in Zimbabwe. And all the people, the station employs nine people, all of them are Zimbabweans.
What would the government do if they were to catch you?
Well, maybe let me start by saying in 2002, just barely a year after we had started broadcasting to Zimbabwe, we were all banned by the Zimbabwean government from ever returning to Zimbabwe, which shows that the government does not tolerate any alternative voices. In fact, our station founder, Jerry Jackson, she had started a radio station called Capital Radio after she was fired at the only broadcasting station in Zimbabwe, ZBC, which is state-controlled, for giving a voice to the voiceless on air. And when she was fired, she started Capital Radio, and it was only it only broadcast for a week before the government sent in soldiers and police officers to close it down. And she was forced to go underground, and that's why she then moved to the UK and formed SW Radio Africa. So since its inception, we've had problems from day one. And we, as I said before, we were all banned, and the Justice Minister actually said in Parliament that if any of us ever returned to Zimbabwe, we would go straight to prison. So I'm sure, you know, that's proof that, you know, that shows the kind of government that we're dealing with. And furthermore, journalists who work for the independent media in Zimbabwe, you know, cannot report freely. We've had journalists getting beaten, journalists getting arrested, and, you know, the government is the sole... If you write anything that may be perceived to be, you know, critical, too critical, you know, to the government, you can get arrested for that. And the government has also created, you know, draconian laws, which makes the jobs and the work of journalists in Zimbabwe very difficult.
What are your personal values? You have a lot of courage to do what you want to do and say the things you want to say. So before you actually wanted to do this job, what do you want out of it?
Well, you know, I think personally, just speaking from my own experience, you know, it's very difficult to make other people understand where we are coming from when we are reporting about Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe is in a conflict situation. We deal with, you know, victims every single day. Like, I can give you an example. You know, I've interviewed so many women that have been raped in Zimbabwe, raped by, you know, government-sponsored thugs. I've interviewed so many opposition members, men and women, who have been beaten, attacked, arrested by the government, and, you know, beaten and attacked by government-sponsored thugs again. And, you know, it's very difficult for one, as a journalist, you know, in that situation to, you know, get themselves, remove themselves from that kind of, you know, environment, even though we might be reporting from outside Zimbabwe. I've now become more of an activist, you know, by default than a journalist, because I'm having to deal with these situations every single day. And I'm a Zimbabwean first. So, you know, there's some people who, yes, there are some journalists who exaggerate things. There are some journalists who are not professional. But in our case, we are dealing with the day-to-day, you know, issues that, you know, many Zimbabweans in Zimbabwe, you know, are going through. And basically, we are providing a voice for the voiceless. And it's not us that are actually reporting about or talking about what the situation in Zimbabwe is about, but that we actually give the victims themselves, the people themselves in Zimbabwe, that platform to air their views. It's not us who are saying Mugabe is doing this, or Mugabe's ministers, Mugabe's cronies are doing this. Everything is well documented. We have experts in Zimbabwe who tell us what's happening. We've got opposition members, opposition MPs, who tell us what's happening, and we have the people themselves. Like, for example, on our station, we only broadcast for 3 hours. We receive so many emails and calls from people in Zimbabwe, you know, begging us to broadcast for 24 hours a day, but because of financial constraints, we can't do that. And we even give an hour-long, you know, program just for the people, which we call back, for them to just air their views, air their grievances, something that they can't do in their country, something that people, Zimbabweans themselves, cannot do in Zimbabwe. Because the only media that's there that, you know, does not get into trouble is the state-controlled media. And basically, they're just there to write or publish state propaganda. I don't know if I've been able to answer you there.
What is happening right now with the shortwave program?
Well, as I said at the beginning, from the very beginning, we've had problems with the government, you know, as we have been exposing the Zimbabwean government's abuses against human rights and its attack on freedom of speech. As a result, the government has continuously tried to have us shut down, and yet all we are doing is giving ordinary Zimbabweans a platform to air their views. So just before the elections, the March 31st general elections, the parliamentary elections, the government started jamming our signals in Zimbabwe. You know, Zimbabweans right now, there are millions of people who are facing starvation, but the government is wasted money, you know, buying Chinese equipment worth millions of U.S. dollars. It's estimated that it might have cost about $30 million to get the equipment in Zimbabwe purely and solely to jam SW Radio Africa. And So ever since the elections, the 31st March elections, we haven't been able to broadcast directly with one frequency. We've had to get multiple frequencies to try and beat the signals. And by doing so, it meant that we exhausted some of our budget, some of our money for the whole year, so that we can broadcast on those frequencies. And we've run out of funds, you know, basically, because of that, because of the jamming. And, you know, donors are now a bit, you know, there's donor fatigue because they can't keep on putting money into a, you know, a situation where, you know, the government continues to jam us. So our main broadcast on shortwave, we had to end them yesterday on the 31st of May. And as from today, we've had to continue with our medium wave broadcasts, which are in the mornings, but they don't reach the whole of Zimbabwe. That's the unfortunate thing. And so far, the government has not yet jammed our medium wave signals, although the main ones, the shortwave signals, which we used to broadcast in the evenings, we've had to stop, we've had to shut down. And furthermore, the medium wave signals that we are continuing with in the mornings may not actually, we may actually have to shut down also at the end of the month if we don't get emergency funding, if we don't get urgent funding.
Whose responsibility is it for the situation in Zimbabwe?
I didn't quite hear you, but I think you said whose responsibility, who's responsible for all this chaos. Is that it? Well, obviously, it's, you know, the president, Robert Mugabe. Like, I can give you an example of just, you know, for the past 2 weeks, the government has embarked on what it calls a cleanup campaign, where it's destroying people's homes, you know, in high-density or low-income suburbs. It's destroying a lot of flea markets or vending stores belonging to informal traders who are trying to make a living. Thousands of people have lost their livelihoods. We're talking about 23,000 people that have been made destitute, that have nowhere else to go now. 23,000 people have been arrested, and all because of one person who has created this mess in the country. There's an economic crisis. People are starving. There's no food. There's no fuel. And, you know, the country is in a complete chaos. And yet, you know, you still have a leader who's 81 years old, who still wants to, you know, stay in power by hook or by crook. And he does not care about the masses who he says put him in the place where he is right now. So all the problems that are in Zimbabwe have to do with a man who is corrupt and with his cronies, and he just wants to stay in power no matter the cost.
What are you trying to promote exactly?
Well, with shortwave radio, it's sadly, you know, as I said, we've had to shut down yesterday, but we are continuing with our medium wave broadcast, and we are continuing broadcast or streaming on the internet 24 hours a day. We are still trying to expose what's happening, the atrocities that are happening in Zimbabwe. We don't want Zimbabwe to become another Somalia. We don't want Zimbabwe to become another Democratic Republic of Congo. We want, you know, a better life for, you know, for Zimbabweans. And we know that Mugabe, if there's a lot of international, if there's exposure, if we are able to expose what he's doing, the international community are going to be, you know, can see what's happening. And also not only to expose what's happening in Zimbabwe, but also to give, you know, the Zimbabweans themselves a platform, you know, to air their views. You know, you can imagine if you're living in a country where you're restricted, you can't even move, you can't even complain about, you know, the situation in your own country. But if we give people that platform to actually air their views, psychologically, it also helps someone to vent or to just talk to someone about, you know, the problems that they're facing in Zimbabwe. And we hope that we're achieving that. And judging from the responses that we've had from people from Zimbabwe and all over the world ever since we started having these problems, it shows that we must be doing something right. And we will continue doing that, even though we are banned in our country. We will continue, you know, to expose what's happening in Zimbabwe.
Is there any progress in your work this far?
Well, progress doesn't just come, you know, overnight. Zimbabwe, you know, the problems that Zimbabweans are facing right now, you know, are not going to be solved, you know, just like that. You know, it's going to take time, but we feel that at least we are helping, you know. The little that we are, you know, doing right now, I'm sure will go a long way in helping, you know, solve the situation in the country, the crisis in the country. And I'm sure that even, you know, the people in Zimbabwe right now, they would want the rest of the world to know what's happening, especially with the raids that are taking place right now. The government is literally, you know, going door to door, destroying, burning homes, and even, you know, the poor masses, the people that are trying to even retrieve their furniture, they're having that furniture destroyed. These are people that have nothing to begin with, and yet the government is taking that little that people have and destroying it, while Mugabe's cronies, you know, they are unaffected. They live in posh suburbs. They have the money. They can go shopping in South Africa, outside the country. The masses in Zimbabwe cannot do those things, and that's why I'm saying we will continue exposing those, you know, those discrepancies, those atrocities in the country.
How would you go about getting the people to fight for their right for proper freedom?
You know, it's very difficult, you know, because I'm actually in a better, and I'm grateful to be able to say the things that I can say from outside the country. Because I know, reporting on the situation in Zimbabwe, I know how difficult it is for people inside the country, you know, to voice their grievances, because they are living with that nightmare. It's their reality. And of course, we have 12 million Zimbabweans in the country, and many people would say, why don't Zimbabwe fight for their rights? Why don't they remove this person? We have to remember that the Mugabe regime is very, we have to remember that Mugabe has got a very fierce security force. You know, he's got the police, he's got the army on his side, and they go into those areas armed, and they go and harass and victimize any person they might feel is, you know, is an opponent. And basically, for me to preach to Zimbabweans on how they should get out of their, you know, crisis is very difficult, because I understand how difficult it is. But I think the one thing that I may just say is there is power in numbers, and obviously Zimbabweans have to, you know, sooner or later realize that if they all join forces and, you know, try not to worry about, you know, what would happen if they go out into the street and demonstrate, they may be able to remove this, you know, this regime. But at the moment, it's very difficult. You have some suburbs, some areas, people are fighting back, but the resistance is sporadic. And maybe the only solution is, if people all join forces and forgot about the fear factor, maybe we might be able to get somewhere. But, I mean, it's a struggle is a process. It won't happen overnight. And I'm sure, you know, the international community has also its role to play, and they are not doing enough to help put pressure on the Mugabe regime.
How did you get the funding to start your shortwave program in London?
Democracy organizations outside the country have been helping. But again, you know, a lot of organizations in Zimbabwe are also facing similar problems, because there's donor fatigue. It seems the international community and the donor community feel that, you know, the crisis in Zimbabwe is going on and on without any, you know, immediate results. And yet I think it's unfair that, you know, the donor community should feel like that, because as I said before, you know, the struggle is, you know, the struggle won't, you know, just finish overnight. It is a process, you know. Sooner or later things are going to work out, but it doesn't happen overnight. And it seems there is donor fatigue. Donors are pulling out of Zimbabwe. There are a lot of NGOs who risk, non-governmental organizations in Zimbabwe who risk closing down, because a lot of the donors are moving out, saying that, you know, the situation in Zimbabwe is not changing, and that's really sad.
In your personal opinion, how long do you think it will take for the Zimbabwe government to change?
Oh, the Zimbabwean government will never change. Mugabe is there to... He wants to be a life president. The Zimbabwean government will never change. In fact, they're getting worse and worse by the day. You know, proof is what's happening, what's been happening in the last few days. You know, people, innocent people, thousands of innocent people have been arrested. Thousands of innocent people have lost their livelihoods. And Mugabe doesn't care. You have school children who have been displaced. You have, you know, a lot of families being displaced. You have the Red Cross cannot even go in there and help because they say they do not, you know, they do not get themselves in war-like situations. And millions of people have been left homeless. And yet you still have a government that says that it was put there by the masses but is destroying the livelihoods of the masses. So I don't think Mugabe is going to change. If he was going to change, you would see things, the situation in Zimbabwe changing for the better, but it's changing for the worse.
How could the listeners out there give their support?
How can listeners give their support to... listeners internationally in the outside Zimbabwe or in Zimbabwe?
Both.
Well, I don't know. It's a tricky one. I'm sure, you know, any pressure is welcome. In Zimbabwe, as I said, you know, Zimbabweans have to realize that they will be their own, you know, I'm at a loss here. Let me rephrase that. I'm sure that Zimbabweans have to, you know, sooner or later, you know, they have to make the first step. The international community wants to see Zimbabweans doing something to help themselves. And, as I said before, they have to mobilize. They have to know that there is power, you know, in mass. If they do things as a mass, as a group, you know, then individually, or wait for the opposition to do something for them. And then the international community has to put more pressure on the Mugabe government to change his ways, to change on Mugabe to change his way. And I'm sure if, you know, everyone rallied together and put pressure on the regime, we would see some results. Sometimes the international community, you know, does not do enough. Like, you know, what happened in Iraq? If there was oil in Zimbabwe, I'm sure the Americans would have intervened somehow, you know, not militarily, or they would have found some way of putting pressure on Mugabe. But that is not happening, and I'm sure that they could do more.
What could Canada do to support your cause?
Again, the same. Right now, when it comes to the people themselves, Zimbabweans need food. Zimbabweans need help. They could send stuff, you know, to different non-governmental organizations to help feed the masses. Millions of Zimbabweans are dying from the HIV/AIDS scourge. And politically, Canada can also voice and put, you know, put their stamp on the mark that, you know, Zimbabwe needs to change, the Zimbabwean government needs to change. And any pressure from any government is welcome. And right now, there is not enough, you know, there's not an outcry, enough, and you know, a lot of pressure coming from these governments, these powerful governments. And I'm sure if they all rally together and put that kind of pressure on the Mugabe regime, things will change for the better.
If our listeners physically wanted to go and help out, how would they go about that?
Well, you know, military action, you mean like military action?
That, I don't know, possibly giving money, donating food, like... How would they go about that?
Donate food, and if there are any people who are able to donate food or to donate, like right now, I can give an example of an area in Harare where thousands of residents have been made homeless. People are sleeping, you know, in the cold. It's winter now in Zimbabwe. You have women and children sleeping in the cold. They've got no toilets. They have no food. And churches, a lot of churches are appealing for food. They're appealing for shelter. They're appealing for blankets. So if there are any people who, or organizations or governments who can help in that way, there are many churches in Zimbabwe. They can contact the Catholic Church in Zimbabwe. I know for sure there was an email that was sent in appeal by some nuns in the Catholic Church who are helping some of these victims. And they say, you know, any food, any blankets are welcome. And mind you, the crisis that's happening right now also has to do with the starvation. There's food shortages in Zimbabwe, and there are a lot of people, millions of people who are facing starvation. So if, you know, food is sent into Zimbabwe, it will help a lot. Because at the end of the day, what Mugabe is also doing, he's not only starving the masses, he's actually pinpointing, it's like a genocide in the making. You know, those people who are perceived to be opposition members do not get food, period. And that's what he is doing. So if there are any people out there who can help, they can help by contacting the main opposition party in Zimbabwe. Churches are, you know, another way of getting, you know, food into the country, or blankets or humanitarian assistance. And they're also, you know, the usual organizations, usual humanitarian organizations like the Red Cross or, you know, the UN. I know that the United Nations and a UN envoy is in Zimbabwe right now, and they are trying to appeal to the government to allow, you know, donor agencies to send in food to help, you know, the starving masses in Zimbabwe. So there are many ways of doing that.
Is there a specific site the listeners could go on and find out more information?
Are there any websites?
Yes.
Yes. Our website, which is SW Radio Afro, we stream every single day. As I said before, we can also be heard on the internet. And our website is www.swradioafrica.com. Most of that information you can also find on that website. You know, church groups that you can talk to, NGOs in Zimbabwe. You can also find those there. Find that information on our website, which is swradioafrica.com. And as I said before, the Catholic Commission for Justice and Peace is also another, you know, group that people can try and find information on how to get information in. www.zimrights.com. That's the Zimbabwe Human Rights Organization. You also have lawyers for human rights, Zimbabwe lawyers for human rights, who are actually taking this legal action against the government, and they are trying to help most of these victims of, you know, human rights abuses. And I'm sure, you know, people can also go onto their site, Zimbabwe lawyers for human rights. They can go to Google and type those names. And basically, you know, there's so many organizations right now. I can't think of, you know, some of the addresses. But to start off with, as I said before, our own site, swradioafrica.com, Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights.com, zimrights.com, Catholic Commission for Justice and Peace, and many other churches in Zimbabwe, which can be found on the website, on the internet.
Thank you very much for your thorough information of the Zimbabwe government and the issues surrounding that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The interview you just heard was from Violet Gonda, a journalist from Zimbabwe Shortwave Radio Africa. And it was done by Daniela Ferenta and me for CJSF. Thank you for listening. I am Elaine Long.